And now we are joined by our guest on the telephone today, Richard Barge. Can you hear me, Richard?
Yes, that sounds good. Thank you, Craig.
Thanks for coming on the show. Really appreciate it, Richard.
Oh, thank you for the opportunity. Always keen to talk about industrial hemp.
Yes, yes. And you're from the New Zealand Hemp Industry Association, but I guess tell us a bit about yourself first, Richard. A bit about yourself.
Oh, my background is in as a job in the accounting field. I just do bookkeeping now, living in Pairoa, so living the dream.
Nice.
And I first got involved in industrial hemp in the mid-90s, and when I returned from an overseas trip, I caught up with a guy called Mac McIntosh, who had just started the New Zealand Hemp Industries Association. Mac's based down in Owaka in the Catlins Valley, and he started, the association was incorporated in March 1997.
97, all right. And was there any hemp growing at that stage in New Zealand or not?
There was illicit crop, of course, but at that time there was a government moratorium on talking about anything to do with cannabis. So the first thing we had to do was raise awareness amongst the public, and particularly the MPs at the time, so we could actually have a grown-up conversation about low-THC industrial hemp. And so we produced the Hemp Association produced a 5-minute guide, and we sent that to all the MPs. And because we had some really talented MPs at the time, you know, your Rod Donalds and Ed Kings and things, they put a bit of pressure on the government and lifted the moratorium. And we were able to have a conversation, which led to the trials of industrial hemp that went on from 2000 until 2005. And during that time, we addressed the issues that the members of parliament and the bureaucracy had, which were mainly around worrying about crop losses and those being diverted into the illegal market.
Right.
And none of that occurred during the trial period. So they realised.
Where were the trials, Richard?
Throughout New Zealand.
Okay.
There were some in the Waikato. There were some really interestingly huge, abundant crops grown in the Waikato, and a lot in the South Island as well. We did a set of 6 or 7 locations from the Hemp Association's point of view, and there were other people involved that I'm happy to say are still involved in the industry, people like Midlands down in Ashburton.
Okay.
And those trials led to the regulations in 2006.
So what were the regulations in 2006, Richard?
So that created the opportunity for the Ministry of Health to issue licences to grow low-THC industrial hemp. So the full title would be the Misuse of Drugs Act Industrial Hemp Regulations 2006, because our regulations have to sit under an act, and because we've got a connection to cannabis, the Misuse of Drugs Act is the appropriate act for us,
right?
Which is a bit of a... You know, it was good that we could get started under that act, but it means that we have to comply to regulatory interpretations based on what the Ministry of Health are planning and thinking about doing, which aren't necessarily in favour of, a large-scale arable and horticultural crop.
Right, okay. That's interesting. And is it still tied up with that act, the Misuse of Drugs Act, or...?
Yes, it's even got an extension to that now, because many of your listeners would be familiar with THC, the active cannabinoid in hemp, being both industrial hemp and cannabis. Of course, we've got less than 0.35% THC. But the other interesting cannabinoid that has gained a lot of notoriety in the recent times is CBD. And because the Ministry of Health have decided that CBD is a prescription-only medicine, we are now obliged to comply with some requirements of the Medicines Act. So we've got two hammers that we're being hit over the head with currently.
And can you make CBD out of hemp or not?
Yes, you can. The general sort of rule of thumb is higher THC plants, less CBD. So therefore, if you've got a plant that is lower THC, then you would have more CBD. There's obviously lots of work being done in breeding up for CBD. In the past, most of the breeding was done to breed up the THC, being the psychotropic compound that got people high.
Yeah.
But from a medicinal point, there's definitely a use for both. And we would look at it because the medicinal use is now governed by the medicinal cannabis legislative framework. We look at the whole health industry as being a lot wider than just the medicinal aspect. It's actually about health and wellness. So those cannabinoids plus the terpenes and flavonoids in those flowering tops of the plant are definitely of interest to the emerging industry when we want to really rally around the full plant utilization. So we're trying to achieve the revenue streams from all parts of the plant. So if you're growing for that health market, which would be a female plant, then you would be, you know, wanting to be able to use the cannabinoids, terpenes and flavonoids to make into your commercial products. And although THC controlled drug and CBD prescription medicine are a little harder to work with, there's loads of other minor cannabinoids which are very, very much of interest to the industry.
Interesting. Okay. Eric, when it comes to growing hemp, you know, as a crop, is it mostly you want females or male plants?
Well, traditionally, as the description I gave to you just now as a health crop, that would be more of a horticultural approach to farming.
Yep.
Whereas generally industrial hemp is used as an arable crop, so that would be for fiber or for seed. The fiber crop is generally harvested a lot earlier than the seed crop. When the males start shedding their pollen would be the best time to get your fiber crop out,
mm-hmm.
whereas the seed crop goes to full maturity and that pollen pollinates that female plant so it can produce the seed. And that's what the main market is for at the moment. In 2018, the law changed to allow us to use hemp seed as a human food, and that really opened up the opportunities in that market for a high-value nutritional product.
And can you export that, or is it just domestic use?
People are starting to export hemp seed oil products.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty hard to compete on the world stage with, you know, the scale of some of the big farms in Canada, for example, and China for that matter. But, you know, we do have an opportunity to create niche markets for high-value products. But again, like most primary producers, you know, it's not about racing to the bottom as a commodity, but rather going up the value chain and adding value in the sense of pressing the seed into an oil and then marketing that as a really distinct product into those global niche markets. So it is starting to happen, that export drive. Mainly previously, it's all been about supplying into the domestic market.
Okay, then. And so how many hectares would you, do you know, are actually planted in hemp in New Zealand at present, Richard?
It varies. It's hard to. We won't know for the current season until all our annual returns are done, which is the annual return is due after the end of the year in June.
Yeah.
But in previous years, we've had as high as 1,335 hectares grown in 2020.
All right.
And that jumped up from 746 hectares the previous year because of this law change to allow us into this human food market.
Right. Okay, then. And how many members are there in the New Zealand Hemp Industry Association, Richard?
We have over 140 members, and we're hoping that will grow as part of the Industrial Hemp Tour that we're doing over June and July. It's a nationwide tour from Whangarei to Gore. And, you know, one of the calls to action is to join the Hemp Industries Association, but also to become part of the collaboration to really build this emerging industry. And it's all about that audience for that tour is all about the end users, because at the end of the day, you know, there's a lot of farmers out there that want to grow industrial hemp because it could work really well in their rotation. But who are they going to sell it to? So looking at the value chain and identifying where the gaps are, there's some opportunities for people to invest in, you know, the infrastructure to process some of this hemp products. And then there's all the other associated new product development around exciting new ways of making hemp available to the consumer. But the another important aspect of that as well is the development of the tech and the processing equipment, because 90 years of prohibition has meant that there hasn't been a lot of work done in the space of industrial hemp.
Right.
So there's some tremendous opportunities in working on producing the tech and the processing equipment that all have licensing opportunities for worldwide markets. And if we don't react, you know, quickly and keep our number eight ingenuity ahead of the curve, then we'll be paying other countries for those licenses to use their technology. So there's a real sort of sense of urgency, and that sense of urgency spreads throughout the value chain. I mean, we can talk about the climate crisis and the role of industrial hemp and the need for, the want of consumers that are interested in more sustainable products and a better story around the products they consume. Mm. And industrial hemp has a lot to offer into a lot of those spaces.
Yeah, I can only imagine after a season like this one just gone, where it was kind of a never-ending summer until it was still dusty in May and around here anyways. And, I guess a lot of farmers will be thinking now, well, you know, maybe, you know, hemp might be, because it doesn't need a heap of water, does it, compared to other crops, and certainly a lot less water and a lot less kind of effort than, say, animals, you know, beef farming.
Often is the case, yes. You can rely on annual rainfall. As all farmers would know, the better the soil is, and irrigation does help. So, you know, if you're in control of the irrigation and water supply, your yield will be more. But generally it's going to be a pretty hardy crop and not requiring too many agricultural inputs. So can be quite exciting in that space, and definitely works well in that organic rotation.
Yeah. Is it a nitrogen fixture as well, Richard, the hemp plants?
Absolutely. It's a gross feeder of nitrogen. So we're very interested in crops that, soil types and conditions and farms that have an abundance of the nitrogen. We don't like wet feet, though, so we wouldn't be wanting to be right on the waterways.
Okay.
But generally a little bit more inland, and, you'd get a really decent crop if you had a lot of nitrogen.
Well, that could solve a few problems at once, couldn't it, in places that are a bit heavy with nitrogen at the moment?
Well, yes, if we were had the ability to share a rotation with, dairy and things like that, that would definitely open up a lot of opportunities. But unfortunately, the way that the regulations sit at the moment, we're not allowed to feed industrial hemp to animals. And it's really quite a difficult situation to have animals near an industrial hemp crop. There's a perceived risk in overseas markets that THC or CBD metabolites would remain in milk or meat products in sensitive export markets.
Right.
Which,
right,
in a nutshell, means that we've got a real problem around having hemp near animals at this moment. But again, we just need some more research to be done, and eventually some of those issues and regulatory roadblocks will be removed.
Are you aware of any research either in New Zealand or around the world going in that area?
Yes, there, it's been quite quiet in the research front. Of course, a lot of research has been going on around the medicinal use of cannabis, but from an industrial hemp point of view, we are starting to see more and more studies appearing around the world. America's doing some really great work. Australia's they're onto their second year of some trials with some sheep. So there's work being done for sheep, chickens, cows for milk production. So there is some work being done in that animal space. And it's just unfortunate that it covers both production animals and companion animals, because a lot of people spend a lot of money on their fur babies, as it were, and we would like to tap into that health and wellness market for those animals too. But because the companion animals are considered alongside production animals, the ban affects both.
Ah, okay, yeah. Well, it's quite a knotty sort of situation with hemp, isn't it? Lots of things to try and weave around.
Definitely. It would be easier if we weren't connected to cannabis, and then cannabis being connected to recreational use, for sure.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It's the plant that has the inherent qualities that we're after. So, the seed it produces is highly nutritious and a great source of essential fatty acids. The leaf and the flowering top, as we've discussed, the cannabinoids, terpenes and flavonoids, and of course the the fibre from the stems is just really amazing, amazingly strong, light, and all these things are, you know, produced sustainably in an annual rotation. So although it has some, yes, I would agree, we've got a bit of a branding issue there. We need to change the narration a little bit to support industrial hemp a lot more and to make sure that the public are aware of these differences between the three sections of the industry being industrial hemp, medicinal cannabis, and recreational cannabis. So it's an ongoing battle, but it is getting easier.
Yeah, yeah. I would imagine most people would be kind of aware of the difference between hemp and cannabis as such anyway, wouldn't they, I guess?
Yes. When I a friend of mine imports handmade Nepalese hats, and I sometimes go to the markets and sell the hats, and I don't have as many people saying, "Can I smoke my hat?" these days as I used to.
Oh, well, that's progress.
Yes. So I'm on that level, but again, it's still that perception that people, you know, when they realise industrial hemp, and then they go to hemp, and then they get to cannabis, and then often the next word out of their mouth is bad. So it's still got a stigma, but, you know, the referendum showed us that 50% of the population were open to the idea.
Yeah.
And therefore it does still have legs. And given the economic potential in rural New Zealand for an industrial hemp crop to flourish, it's something that seriously has to be considered.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, more diversity, the better, really, in that regard. But so I guess you mentioned earlier about your tour you're running. So just run us through that and where people might catch up there and what you're going to be talking about there, Richard.
Okay, so we've got a series of town hall meetings, which we started in Whangarei a couple of weeks ago.
Were they kind of well attended so far?
Yes, the more marketing that we can get out there, more awareness we can raise, they'll get better as well. But we're recording a lot of the meetings. So we're setting up a Aotearoa New Zealand Hemp Coalition or Hemp Alliance online portal to try and get the community involved. And that all these presentations that we're doing during the tour and the summits we've had in the past are all providing information that we can populate that online portal with, to help people with their hemp journey and really speed things up. So, for example, when we do our town hall meetings, it might be talking about the regional strengths in the area that we're presenting at. And if we're at the universities, it might be highlighting the capacities and resources available at those universities and Crown Research Institutes. So people that are getting interested in hemp can work out exactly who they need to speak to a lot quicker because of their background. If they want to make a particular product, there might be people that are already working in that space, whether it be a sort of a biofuel or a biochar. They may be interested in listening to the Massey speaker that we have next week when we go down to Palmerston North. Mm-hmm. But for the listeners in your area, it would be we have a town hall meeting in Hamilton on the 4th of July.
Yeah,
and another town hall meeting in Thames on the 3rd of August, which is covering that Hauraki Plains, Coromandel Peninsula type area. And you can get information on both of those events at nzhia.com.
Okay. All right, so there, coming up, 4th of July in Hamilton? Was that the town hall, is it, did you say?
It's the long room at Wintec.
Long room at Wintec, okay. And 4th of August, was it 3rd of August in Thames?
3rd of August in Thames at the War Memorial Town Hall there.
Okay. Are you doing anything like kind of South Auckland ways around Pukekohe or Tuakau or anything like that?
We only have one meeting at the Auckland University on the 7th of July.
Okay.
During this tour. But all of the people that attend or participate in them will have links to the online. You can either watch it online or be there in person, and then we'll record the event so they'll be available for others to view. So one day, maybe over the summer, we can look at coming back up to Tuakau because there is quite a bit of interest in that Pukekohe, South Auckland area.
Okay, interesting. Well, that's really interesting, Richard. Yeah, thanks for coming on. Let's get you on again because there's a few more things I want to run through, but I'm kind of running a little out of time here. So any information about New Zealand Hemp, we'll just jump on the New Zealand NZHIA, New Zealand Hemp Industry Association website. And everything will be there?
That's it, thensdhia.com. That'll be great. And happy to come back anytime and inform your listeners more about the amazing potential of industrial hemp.
Yeah, well, like you say, there's so many things. Like, you know, there's the fibre, the seed, you know. I think it's quite exciting, actually. And good on you guys for giving it a run round. I'm sure it'll get picked up well because, I'd imagine there'll be a lot of farmers and landowners looking for, you know, doing something slightly differently, I think, with the way the farming's going at the moment in the country.
That's for sure, and alternate land uses are popular in that space, and as a rotational crop, yes, we really do believe we have a role to play in that, and we just need some more, you know, a lot of significant research being done on, you know, the effect of follow-on crops and that sort of thing would be great to have. And we haven't sort of touched on, you know, that we could take a deep dive around phytoremediation using hemp to lift heavy metals and clean soils, talk more about the fibre. So, yes, Craig, I think we'll probably have to get together at some point again.
I think we will, yes. Yeah. And do you ever head over to Raglan, do you?
Happy to at some stage. A bit busy in the next sort of 2 months around this tour.
Yep.
We'd love to come out. And there's a great little hemp store in Raglan. So if your listeners want to support local industry, that would be a good way to do it.
Yes, and I know also that the wastewater from the Raglan Township, there's been a lot of debate and discussion about, you know, what could actually happen with it. And there has been suggestions, I've heard people say, that if, say, part of the Wainui Reserve or something like that was actually planted out in hemp, and like you say, the hemp plants themselves would take a lot of the heavy metals and a lot of the nitrates and things like that out of the wastewater. That's another interesting use for hemp, possibly. Is there any examples of that around the country or in the world?
Not around New Zealand. Silver Fern Farms did a study on some, a field with effluent on it. As I say, it can't be too wet, so there would be some conditioning.
Yeah.
Of course, you wouldn't possibly want, until you've done more studies, to use that as a food crop, but definitely to provide fibre for a hempcrete building or something like that, it's a possibility. It depends a little bit on how to scale it up as well. But it may be part of a solution around biorefinery into turning those sort of wastes into energy. But there's a great scope for that sort of question to really be put to the experts within the areas of dealing with wastewater. We potentially have a role to play, as you pointed out. I mean, as a nitrogen feeder, we would love the nitrogen if it could be presented in a suitable way. So definitely an option, and all these options need to be explored.
Well, yeah, no, it's really interesting. Richard, yes, I'll definitely have to get back on. Yeah, so we'll jack something up for the next few months or something when you get a minute and come and have a chat in the studio or by the phone again or whatever, and that'd be great. But thanks very much for your time today, Richard. I really hope the tour goes well around the countryside. But, yes, Hamilton on the 4th of July at the Long Room in Wintec and over be the Thames Town Hall, I guess, would it?
Yeah, the War Memorial Hall there.
War Memorial Hall on the 3rd of August, you said, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yes, that's cool. Right.
All right. Hey, thanks again, Richard, and really appreciate it. And, yes, we'll definitely keep in touch because I feel like there's lots we haven't actually got to today.
Very good, sir, and thank you very much for the opportunity to present some hemp information to your listeners. Wonderful opportunity, thank you.
Yeah, no worries. Welcome back anytime, and yes, we'll catch up.
Okay.
All right.
Look forward to it.
Cheers, Richard. Good luck.
See you, mate. Wait.
That was Richard Barge there from the New Zealand Hemp Industry Association, and yes, folks, there's a lot there. I think it's going to be quite a big player in the future of New Zealand kind of agriculture and horticulture, and it'll be a lot more in the landscape, I'm picking anyways. Very exciting and good work they're doing. But that's it for the show anyway for today. I hope you enjoyed it. I'll be back next week, like Fire Ruhi would say. Me haere aho, I got to go. So take care, folks. See you next week. Have a good one.